Grief is a natural part of life, and we all experience it at some point. By becoming aware of our emotions in the process of grief, we can begin to accept and move through our pain. Acceptance doesn't mean that we forget or stop feeling the loss, but it allows us to come to terms with it. And finally, we can choose to honour our loved ones by celebrating their life and finding meaning in our grief. Join me as we explore these pillars of grief and how they can help us navigate the journey of grief. We will explore this journey together, and you will hear from experiencers, experts, and researchers. I'm Jock Brokas, and this is The Pillars of Grief. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jock here, and this is The Pillars of Grief, and I'm delighted, as promised, to bring my very good friend back for part two of our discussion on grief. And this is Dr. Charleston Gaines, who is a psychologist. And if you haven't actually listened to the last episode, then what are you doing? Jump back and listen to that episode, because that's going to frame up what we are talking about now. Are you struggling with grief? Hi, I'm Jock Brokas, a grief researcher, author, spiritual mentor, and renowned evidential medium. Join me on the Pillars of Grief podcast. Through personal teachings and interviews with experienced researchers and educators, I will provide valuable insights and support to help you navigate your journey through grief. I will answer the questions you yearn to be answered, and I'll help you understand your journey. Listen and subscribe to the Pillars of Grief podcast today on your favorite platform and start navigating your journey through grief. Okay, Charleston, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm glad to be back. I appreciate you having me here again.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, the last time, you know, we got right into it, we were talking about your experiences. We were talking about, you know, obviously how you lost your mother. But as we were going through that conversation, you know, we realized that there's so much more to grief than meets the eye. And the thing is, as you and I both know, when people think grief, they immediately think loss of a loved one. Somebody's dead. Somebody's passed over. Actually, and I don't tend to like to use that word dead, because it's kind of so final.
Right.
So that's not the way that I kind of think about things. But it's people equate that word with death and passing over. But you and I both know that there is so much more to this. So much more to grief. Because it's covering all sorts of loss. So we're going to dive into that tonight. And hopefully you guys that are listening, if you've got any questions after the show, then send it into us, because then that will allow us to come back and answer those questions as well. So what do you think about that? What do you think about us, you know, this whole idea of grief being bigger than what people actually think it is, Charleston?
Well, I think that when people talk about grief involving or being centered around the loss of life, losing someone that you love, that data is easy to process. It's almost linear, right? So you lose someone, you suffer grief. That's the process. That's the linear, whatever, yeah, sequential event. But when we do that, yeah, what we're doing is we're essentially trying to define a process that's not really definable, because grief is more than just our dictionary definition. It's almost like, yeah, did you experience loss? Yes or no. Did you experience grief? Yes or no. As if it's that simple. And it's really not.
And of course, you can have one aspect. I mean, you can lose a loved one, but and have that form of grief. But at the same time, you could lose something like your job and have that form of grief. And then now you've got two forms of grief that are exacerbating and feeding each other. And so that becomes, I mean, a real big psychological potential for disaster right there. So, I mean, there's so many aspects. And I know in my life, I've lost a lot. You know, I've lost loads of loved ones. But I've also lost, you know, things that have made me think about grief in a different way. You know, there's the sense of loss of identity, the sense of loss of, you know, even if you lose something as simple as a pet, let's say, for instance, we talk about a pet or losing something like that, then that can cause us a mass amount of anxiety and depression. What, you know, give us an example, Charleston, about your a time in your life where you actually experienced loss, but not necessarily from a loved one's point of view.
Well, I'll say this. A lot of times when we think about grief and we associate it with the loss of a loved one or someone passing away, what we do is we put those two together. So then if we're experiencing another kind of loss, we don't know what that is. So we don't know we're experiencing it. And so I'll give you an example that a lot of people don't think about. And this is a simplified version, but this is something that happened to me in 2019. I lost a very important friendship. There was a misunderstanding and we quit being friends. And I'm going to tell you that, again, it goes back to allowing yourself to feel, allowing yourself to experience whatever you're going through. Because when a man in his 40s says, "We're not friends anymore," it sounds funny, right? Like, "I lost my best friend." It sounds funny.
It's my ball and you're no playing.
it sounds funny, but in reality, that all of those things make up who you are. And they are part of the way that you perceive your world, the world around you. You know, as far as how you think things are today, how you expect things to be in the future, things external to you. And so when you lose that, you grieve. And it's not like a choice. It's you find it impacts your mood and impacts your thoughts. Like, you're just not in the mood to do anything. You know, things that used to interest you, they don't anymore. But because you don't consider losing a friend as an adult to be something worthy of grieving, you'll judge yourself. Why do I feel this way? What's the big deal? It's not supposed to be important. And in reality, it's your body's grieving whether your brain knows it or not.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask you, I mean, this was obviously before you became, you know, doctor of psychology, obviously. But could you recognize the pattern of grief in that behavior, or did you not know what, you know, this is new to me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. I don't understand this.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this. And this is one reason why I have so much respect for you. And I really appreciate the work that you do, Jock, is because I didn't recognize how grief was associated with things like that till after you and I had a conversation a few months ago.
That's true.
So I knew that it hurts, but I didn't call it grief, you know?
Interesting.
And the reason why that's important is because if you can label it, you can do something about it, right?
It's that awareness phase, isn't it? You become aware of it, then you can make the choice after you have the awareness.
Exactly.
Your camera's falling everywhere.
I keep messing with my camera. That's not good, but...
Now, for those of you that are listening on the podcast, you can't see nothing, but he is wobbling his camera like crazy. So, those of you who are watching on YouTube, this is another entertainment aspect of this show. So,
but I'm listening. So, ask me another question. Let's keep it going.
So he is listening. So, you didn't understand this. So, you didn't really understand that was grief, but. And let's equate this to other people that might not understand that's grief. What was it? Let's go into your feelings. What was it? You said you were feeling sad and everything else, but what other feelings did you feel in that aspect of loss, if you like?
Well, what you feel is, and I'm going to tell you what a lot of people don't recognize, is that all of your relationships, all of your connections impact the way that you feel about yourself. if I think that you are a high quality person, I think that you're a person that you have my back and I'm worthy of our friendship.
Yeah.
Then I lose you as my friend. I question why. Sometimes I know exactly what I did. It's a misunderstanding. You perceive it differently than I do, but I know exactly why. And other times you don't know why. And so when you think about it, what happens when you kind of lose your sense of self-worth? Well, it's physiological. So it impacts your mood, your happiness, your appetite, your how you're able to sleep. It impacts all of those things. And what you don't realize is that you're trying to recover, but it's not just your thoughts. Like a loss is a blow. And so your body is trying to recover. And so, yeah, I didn't know that what I was experiencing was a loss, but I knew that it impacted my mood, my appetite, my sleep habits, and the way that I viewed my overall worth. And that's partly because this friend that I lost, I thought was an amazing person.
Did that affect you? I know you say that it affected your worth, right? And it affected the way that you felt about yourself. Did that affect you with other relationships, perhaps in a work environment, or perhaps just even in your own environment?
It does. And for a lot of people who know why they feel a certain way, they're able to hide it. But hiding it is not the same as not being impacted. So you may be going through something, right? Regardless of the emotion. And then when you're at your place of work, you got to hide it. You got to fake it, things like that. So it does impact you whether you are willing to admit it or not. And again, it's impacting you physiologically. So you can tell yourself it doesn't matter. And we see that crap all the time, like on social media. Don't listen to other people. It doesn't matter. Who cares what they think? You didn't need them. Cut them off. And so when we're done with the stupid quotes, let's connect with how we actually feel.
Yes. Yes, because that's surface level stuff that they're talking about. And the reality is I often find that the reality is that people that are doing that and shouting it doesn't matter, you know, you don't care what other people think. And there's a certain element of truth into that. But, you know, when you're feeling the way you feel through the loss that you've experienced, whether it's a friendship or another relationship, it does affect you psychologically. It does affect you in even in your health. You know, I've known people who have lost relationships and it's impacted them in a big way, not only physiologically, but biologically as well. And the thing is, I don't think society really understands the impact of grief and what grief actually is. Because we can compartmentalize it into just saying it's loss. But what does that really mean? Loss of what?
I can really dig into this. And so first of all, I'm gonna come from the opposite angle. The opposite angle being needing for people to understand the impact of loneliness. So research has shown that loneliness is more likely to cause early death than obesity, alcohol abuse, and smoking. In fact, loneliness contributes to those other things.
I was going to say, so loneliness impacts grief.
It really does, but quite often when you lose a friendship or a relationship, right? And you know, even when I went through a divorce last year, then you feel lonely. And so
And you were grieving. Well, you didn't know this at the time, but you were also grieving at the same time.
Well, very much so, grieving at the same time. And the thing about it is, so the grief contributes to the loneliness. You're lonely because where there was a relationship.
I would say, so I love that you're saying that. The grief contributes to the loneliness.
Right.
But also the loneliness contributes to the grief.
Exactly. And so it really depends on, okay, let me tell you this other thing. After experiencing trauma, social support is the number one, social support is the number one factor if you're going to experience PTSD or post-traumatic growth.
Yes.
And so what happens a lot of times is you suffer a loss, and so there's grief. And so you're lonely. And so I say grief contributes to loneliness, and you say loneliness contributes to grief. Well, what happens is grief contributes to loneliness, and if you have social support, you have a circle, you have people that love you, people that can be there for you, then that can kind of buffer the loneliness. But if not, then yes, the loneliness feeds back into the grief. So it's this cycle. But if you don't realize that you're grieving, then you don't position yourself to stop the cycle.
I love this. Let's go deeper into this, because here's the other thing. So, you know, you and I, you know, both I study post-traumatic stress and also post-traumatic growth and prolonged grief disorders, one of the two things that I really focus on. And one of the things I found in my research is that I love how you say that, you know, if one feeds the other, and the loneliness is exacerbated, but it's a buffer if you're socially connected. However, you can still be, what I found in my research is you can be essentially socially connected or as an illusion, but be actually totally disconnected, because people then who are suffering really deep grief, and then the loneliness comes in, even though it's that old saying, isn't it, that you can be the loneliest man in a party in the room when everybody's there. So while the illusion is that there's social connection, in reality, psychologically, there's massive disconnection, which would probably exacerbate the grief and the loneliness even more.
Well, it definitely would. And a big part of that, I feel like you and I should actually be in the same room and have 6 hours to talk about it. but the truth is, so how can you be, how can you have a long list of people that you call friends, like legitimate, valid friends, but you're still lonely? There's a couple of different reasons why. First of all, it's your ability to be vulnerable.
Mm, yes.
Can I open up? Am I open to receiving the social support? You sitting in the same room with me might be social support. It might not be. It depends on the barriers I've created or that I've taken down. And so then, so there's that aspect of, are you really open to that? And then another part of it is, again, your perspective, because when we say vulnerability is strength, another way to look at that is, if you care about me, if you're my friend, you really care about me and you want to be there for me, and I put up that barrier, I am being selfish with my grief. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving you the opportunity and privilege to use your love and our connection to help me. I'm not opening up myself to let you be the kind of friend that you want to be in your heart.
Oh, this is such a double-edged sword here. Absolutely. And I see this in people who have lost loved ones. I did a lesson a long time ago on my other YouTube channel, and it was or on this YouTube channel I was listening, but it was about the selfishness of grief and how, you know, that goes into all the afterlife and stuff like that. But there is an aspect of the selfishness of grief and being selfless at the same time as well, where I think the person who's grieving, whether it's loss of a loved one, whether it's loss of a relationship, doesn't know how to be vulnerable.
Yes.
That's the problem, is that they don't know how to be vulnerable, because if they did, then maybe there wouldn't be that disconnect there, and maybe there wouldn't be that massive imbalance, and they wouldn't feel as lonely. But they don't know what vulnerability is and what it means to be vulnerable.
Yeah, and part of that is, especially in the loss of, in the loss of a relationship where you are kind of using your manhood or masculinity as kind of the foundation of how you judge yourself, right? So let me give you an example. When I was in, I think I was in high school or something, and this song came out called Return of the Mac. And whatever.
Oh, Return of the Mac.
Exactly. Return of the Mac. And so when you all of a sudden become single, you get divorced or whatever, you're a man. It's supposed to be the Return of the Mac. Look at me. I'm back. I'm a man.
Yeah.
And when I do that, let's look at how I am treating you. When I do that, when I say, all right, now I'm the Mac, I'm back, and I'm secretly hurting inside, I am denying you my authentic self.
Yes. You're painting an illusion.
Right. To protect myself.
And a lie. You're living a lie.
Yes, exactly. And living a lie to protect myself from my friends, it doesn't even make sense.
No.
But when you're
that's the element of selfishness in your grief as well.
But when you're grieving, you don't know that's happening.
No.
But also, when it's a divorce, loss of a friendship, maybe your girlfriend or boyfriend, you broke up, and then you think, well, we were only together for a few months, so I shouldn't be hurting this man. So you don't even know that it's grief. So you're fighting the grieving process. You're trying to not even get into it.
I think there's a stigma attached to it as well. You don't want to admit to yourself that you're grieving, because again, we have that whole attachment to death. But the reality is that it is, it's almost like the death of a relationship or an identity or something, you know, where you have that, and then it's created this disconnect. So, I mean, I can understand that from that point of view, but a lot of people, I think there's a fear of what grief is. And there's also a fear of vulnerability. So, you know, like you said, the Mac is back and he's grieving, but he doesn't want to show it. And then he's living in a sense of fear of what? Fear of what? Being judged because he becomes vulnerable and shows his grief?
Well, it's exactly that. And I'll tell you a big part of it. And I'm going to say this for men, because I haven't done too much reading or research on this from the perspective of a woman. But for men, a lot of us have not experienced the kind of relationships where we have what we would call unconditional love. Like, even if we are loved unconditionally, we don't even recognize it. So we think that, and we could be completely wrong, but we think that we're loved because of what we do and what we provide. And so I think that if I cannot continue to provide this to you, then I'm going to lose value and worth to you. And the truth is, that's not fair to you. And by being unfair to you, I am creating a barrier for myself that keeps me lonely and grieving.
Do you think that, I love the fact you bring up this unconditional love aspect, because there's an element where one person can't show unconditional love and the other person can't receive it. But at the same time, I would venture that even the person who's grieving is unable to show unconditional love, because if they did, there wouldn't be that element of loneliness.
Yeah, I agree with you. And at the same time, I think that the grief can be so overwhelming that you're not even thinking about that. Like, your grief is preventing you from loving others the way that you should, but you don't know that you're grieving. And so you're just trying to man up and work through it. And here's the thing about when you are grieving, you try to man up and you try to work through it and you try to be strong. If you wouldn't tell your friends to man up after a loss, then don't tell yourself that.
That's brilliant. Yes, I like that. It's true, because you wouldn't dream of a really close friend who was going through some loss or you know, whether it was grief of a loved one, you wouldn't say, just get over it, man up, you know, don't be a wuss.
Yeah.
Because you would have compassion. So here's the other thing. There's that element of lack of compassion in our grief for ourselves. So if we're here's the thing. I want to go. Can I go to your divorce?
Let's hit all of it.
So when you divorced, which was a recent divorce for you, I would think that you had a lack of compassion for yourself, because you would probably be in that questioning phase, or that, you know, looking at yourself in a negative light. What did I do? Why did I lose this person? Why did this happen? What about me? So I guess in this different level of grief that we're talking about, and unconditional love and being vulnerable, compassion for you, for the self, is a massive factor in how deep you grieve.
Yeah, self-compassion is definitely a massive factor. But one thing about grief that severely limits self-compassion is not even understanding what's going on. And when I say not understanding what's going on, you have the data, you have the information. Divorce is final on this day. So you understand that, right? No one needs to explain. Yeah. This happened on this day. Yeah. But on a deeper level, and I've been thinking and talking about this more often lately. I think the individual's name, I think her last name is Foa. FOA, and a lot of her research was in the early 90s, and she talked about shattered assumptions theory. And so
I've heard of that. I haven't researched any of her stuff.
Well, so you have assumptions about yourself, the world around you, and the future. And so what I'm about to say is so simple, right? So what happens is, and I'll use my divorce as an example. I had this assumption about things we were going to do in the future. So my assumptions about the future have been shattered. I had assumptions about the world around me. For example, when this happens, we may do these things together as a team. Well, that was that shattered. And then for myself, one day I was somebody's husband, and the next day I wasn't. And so my view. Go ahead.
So now we're jumping into, because this is another element of grief and loss, is now we're losing identity. We're grieving identity as well as the loss of the relationship. So now we have two factors of grief in this one journey.
Yeah, and you look at, and you say in this one journey, so let's look at where you are in this journey. When you're asking, okay, now who am I? And you're asking that question in your mid-40s is different than being a teenager trying to figure it out. So, okay, who am I really? Because who I thought I was, I'm not that person. And that's where the self-compassion comes in. Self-compassion will say, it's okay, don't worry about it. Just relax. Let time heal. Reach out to your friends who love you and got your back. But if you can't be vulnerable and you don't grasp or understand, or if you're not available to self-compassion, then you sit there lonely grieving. And in a case of divorce, maybe you don't know you're grieving. And so you just sit there in pain and you don't know why. Imagine the pain of a broken arm. And so you feel the pain of a broken arm. But you don't know it's coming from your arm. You don't know where it's coming from. What are you going to do? You're just going to sit there until you figure out what it is. But you're embarrassed. So you don't call anyone and ask for help. And you feel stupid. And you can't feel stupid and feel self-compassion at the same time. Am I going to love me or am I going to judge me? I can't do both at the same time.
Why do you think that we have got to this level as a society? Because this seems to be, look, we've got this underlying theme that we've talked about many times, and people don't understand grief. It's just a name, it's a word, and it's equated with one thing, and that's it. But where have we gone wrong in society that we have to have so much silent suffering because of fear and ignorance of what grief actually is?
Oh, you know, the first thing that comes to mind for me, the first word that came to mind for me was a lack of vulnerability. People,
wow, okay.
People are afraid to ask, Jack, I'm going through this. What is happening to me? It's hard to ask people that. Yeah. When you say, hey, what's going on? And I don't know. I don't know that grief is the word that I'm looking for. So what do I tell you was going on? Nothing. It's kind of been a long day, but I'm okay.
It's all good. It's all good, dude. Yeah.
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 And so what happens is we're unable to connect. And a lot of times when we're unable to connect due to a lack of vulnerability, it works both ways. So then maybe when you're hurting, you don't come to me.
Yeah.
Because when I was hurting, I closed you off. And okay, I might hit some nerves with this one. Why are we so lacking in vulnerability? Because when we were children, we didn't get hugs and kisses and I love yous enough. We weren't made to feel safe and secure with a healthy sense of self-love. People don't understand. It's literally quantitative. Hug people more. Hug your kids more. Hug your wife more. Hug your husband more. Hug your sister, brother, cousins. Mm. Hug them more. Because the more your body feels
connected, you hit the nail on the head there, because I'd never had a lot of hugs from my father. And we never had that as close a relationship or anything. Yeah, of course, with my mum and stuff like that. But then obviously when I lost my father, then the grief was different. You know, I went through that whole loss. But you're absolutely right. We never, I guess we would learn to be more vulnerable if our parents were more vulnerable and opened with us.
Exactly. So here's the thing. Here's the thing you say, if our parents were more open and vulnerable with us, how many kids know when their parents are hurting? If you can see you can see your dad handle or deal with having his feelings hurt, you might learn how to deal with it when you're an adult. But there are so many people who have never, they've never seen their dads cry. And so when...
Oh, I have, but that was when Scotland lost the World Cup. Or when his favorite racehorse, when he just lost, you know?
Yeah.
I jest, but there is a serious... I mean, I get it. There's a serious side to it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you're like, as a kid, okay, so it's okay to cry then, but why is it okay to cry when you lose a World Cup? Because that's a part of wanting to belong. We're all doing that.
We're all trying to belong and not even knowing where we need to belong.
Right, but when you have your feelings hurt and you don't know what it looks like to heal from that. And I'm talking about someone hurting your feelings. I'm not even talking about grief. We don't know what our parents look like when someone insulted them at work. We just know that when they came home, they said, like, don't talk to me right now. Like go to your room and play. They said things like that. They didn't say, I had a really bad day at work. I got in an argument with a friend. So they didn't watch anyone process.
Or as you suggested, that friend relationship ended and fizzled. And so they're beginning the grief journey and then taking that into the home environment and other relationships. So it's impacting the whole dynamic.
It really is. And again, going back to what is grief, a couple things. First of all, if you recognize that you are grieving and why, and then you recognize that choosing vulnerability and self-compassion will help you heal. those things really elevate your ability to transcend grief and then return to a state of emotional normalcy. But if you don't, and when I say if you don't know you're grieving, it may sound silly to some people, right? But let me explain. For my marriage, the coming undone part lasted a long time. You don't go to the store and buy a divorce. There's a process.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been there.
And
yeah.
So you know what's coming. The same way you know that someone is going to pass away from cancer. But what happens with cancer is when they pass away from cancer, it is final. It's final. But when the divorce happens, depending on your situation, like having kids, sharing assets, the person who left you, you still see them every day. They're still there. And so there's still a piece of hope. So if I'm still holding out hope, how can I grieve? And so then I'm an emotional wreck. And so what happens is you can still have those, because we had an amicable divorce. And so we were still friends. We still had each other's back. We still did things for each other. And so I didn't get deep into grieving for like another 8 months. I did not realize that I was on a slow downward trajectory. I didn't even know.
I remember when you, as you were, I mean, going through it, and you have your good days, you have your bad days, but inevitably the grief creeps up on you very, very slowly. And it eats away at you. It eats away at you slowly as well. It's like a necrotizing disease.
So here's something for you, and I want to get your take on it.
All right.
So this,
I love it. I'm getting tested.
This is, I don't know how common this is, because I'm the kind of guy that I never really dug into spirituality.
Okay.
But some events in my life have led me to be more open-minded about it. And, in an idea of your mind and brain being separate. And the reason I'm saying that to you is because after my divorce, I'm telling you, man, I dreamed about her every single night for like 6 or 7 months, literally every night. And some of the dreams were dreams like, in my dream, we were watching TV. In my dream, she comes home from the store. So I'm not talking about like Vietnam flashbacks. I'm talking about
just, No. I see. Yeah.
So to be connected on that level, and to even be trying to get over her, but I dream about her while I'm trying to get over her, and it's like, I don't even know what to say. So I'm gonna put it to you like that. Like that's like I want to get over someone, grieve this loss of someone who I dream about every night, and I see almost every day when I do things like see our kids. And just other things that we were still doing together.
Beyond this podcast, my work involves delivering thought-provoking talks and workshops which are deeply rooted in my experience and extensive research. My objective is to bring a profound understanding of grief to your organization, turning adversity into strength, resilience, and growth. I can help you forge a compassionate and supportive environment that encourages emotional resilience. We will create sustainable solutions for managing grief and loss. Understanding grief isn't a luxury, it's a necessity, a fundamental aspect of our human experience that directly impacts our work lives. As leaders, your comprehension and management of grief can be transformational for your organization. I invite you to collaborate with me on this journey. Contact me at jockbrokers.com. So there's a couple of aspects to look at it from, because essentially there's the aspect of you grieving in the material world, which is very kind of finite, and it's very so much in the conscious expression. You, as you said, you know what's coming. It's in your, you know, it's your thought process in your brain, because you're connected consciously to the material level. But then there's that spiritual connection. There's the higher self, if you like. Let's say that it's two separate beings. You've got the the chalcedon that's on the material world and then the higher self on the other world. And the higher self doesn't see, it doesn't necessarily equate with this negativity that you've gone through. There has to be, you have to blend both together. So it's like my work, for instance, as a medium, and didn't want to go into that side of things, but I have to be able to raise my vibration enough so that I can go up and I can vibrate and I can meet loved ones on the other side in that vibration. So essentially, I'm having to scale that way. Well, here's the thing, is your higher self has got to come down at the same time as you're coming up so that you can get balance. You've also got to remember that there's, we know you were together for so long and you had children. There's still a love connection there, right? And so we take that love connection away from the material world. That is a spiritual love connection. That won't ever die. Even it won't ever fade. Even though that you're separated, your souls are still connected in some way, right? There's still a vibrational attachment there. Whilst it may vibrate differently, there is still that there. And so your soul is yearning for expression, and your higher self is yearning for expression, and your higher self wants peace and harmony and love. But that doesn't often equate to what happens in the material world, because if you start to vibrate higher and your partner is not willing to, you know, work with you and meet with you on that vibrational plane, then obviously you've got magnetic, you don't have magnetic attraction, you have magnetic repulsion. And that's when two things separate. And so then you have divorce, you have breakdown of relationship. But essentially it's not the same as it is in the world of spirit, or it's not the same as it is in a divine sense, because we don't have that. We have duality and karmic imbalance here in the material world, but we don't have duality in the spirit world.
See, you say that, and then what did we speak on earlier? Self-compassion. So everything that you just explained, what helps with that? Self-compassion.
Self-compassion, absolutely.
Yeah.
And self-compassion, so it's an element of, I wouldn't say it's not a divine law essentially, but self-compassion is a divine power. And so that compassion is existent in the spiritual realm. And we have to, so the mind and brain connection, it kind of comes down to this, right? Is the, you know, I've had this argument lots of times, is the brain an expression of the mind, right? Or as some scientists would say, that the mind is in the brain. So for me, the brain is an expression of the mind. So essentially, the compassion that you have is a divine power, and you have to express it. You have the choice. You have to express that in your material world to start to bring that vibration up and that harmony up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what makes it easier for that to happen is for you, first of all, to have self-compassion like we spoke on. And another thing is for you to recognize that you are grieving. And so
you have to know, yeah.
Yeah, and so part of that is recognizing that grieving is physiological. So you may not say that you're grieving, you may not think that you're grieving, but your body doesn't care what your brain thinks.
No.
And so you have to be able to recognize and answer the questions. Why am I going through this? And when I say, why am I going through this? I'm talking about certain physiological things that may not make sense to you. Why is it that now I cannot sleep at all? Why is it that sometimes I will randomly just feel overwhelmed with sadness? What is going on? Well, grief is what's
going on. Our emotional capacity, our emotional experience is then expressed in our physiological and our biological experience, because we don't, you know, we can't sleep anymore, we're anxieties, we feel sick. So really our emotions are also connected here, and that's causing us a great imbalance. So we have to become aware of the emotional roller coaster that we're on.
And so then what you do to kind of tie it all together is a lot of it is not just awareness, but acknowledgement. Like, I have to admit to myself, this physiological reaction within me is tied to this event. Then I can say why. And I can answer the question honestly because I loved, like, not just the person, but what I expected in the future and the way that I perceive the world around me. And so when those things are broken down, I've lost part of my identity. And when we most often talk about grief, we don't dive deep enough into I've lost a part of myself. That sounds
so much.
That sounds nice when we're talking about losing a loved one. So you and I were one and you passed away and I lost a part of me. But we don't say that when things such as getting fired from a job that you love. There was an individual. Still lost,
yeah.
There was an individual. This was an ordeal that I witnessed and kind of was a part of on Facebook. There was this individual that was in the Air Force for 27 years. And he was the highest enlisted rank. He was a chief master sergeant. And he had PTSD. And so the way the military works is they have what's called a medical board. And they say, let's look at your medicals.
Yeah.
And if we determine that you're not fit to stay in the military, then we're going to force you to get out or retire, whatever it is. But for him, after being in for 27 years, he was being forced to retire. And so he and people knew this and they wanted to celebrate him. They loved him. But then on Facebook, just out of nowhere, there's this long rant. Who am I? All I know, I am chief. This is who I am. And his identity was shot. And other people responded. Well, they responded with compassion, but some other people were like, bro, you're 27 years old. I mean, you've been in 27 years. You're just going to have a career change. People have career changes all the time. People get out of the military all the time. What's the big deal?
And see, that don't help because that's just platitudes.
It really is. And so what happened is, he was overwhelmed with grief about losing his identity, not just the thing he did to get paid, but everything about him was tied into that.
Changed. Everything changed.
Right. And so for him, you know, back to being vulnerable, you can be forced out like he was, but if you don't know how to be truly vulnerable and open to receive compassion and open to self-compassion, then the people who love you the most, like his wife and adult kids, he's not even open to receiving their love and support. You know, one thing that we do in grief is we tell everyone else they won't understand.
And essentially, we kind of, this comes into belief as well, because then we believe they won't understand, but we don't give them an opportunity to try.
Right. Right, exactly. And so, like, what happens is, well, let me talk first about delayed onset PTSD, right? And so, some people develop PTSD shortly after the trauma. Some people develop PTSD months or years later. It's delayed onset.
Yeah.
And so, what happens is, like, delayed onset grief, which I would say that's what I had.
I would say so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It took a while to come on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're so busy saying, I'm okay, and creating barriers and not letting people in, not being vulnerable, lying to yourself, no self-compassion, not just allowing yourself to feel, then as you move towards delayed onset PTSD or delayed onset grief, you have opportunities to stop that process through self-compassion, through friendships, but you don't stop it because you don't let other people in. So then,
and you have no awareness of it.
Exactly, exactly. You don't even know what you're doing.
You don't even know what you're doing. There's no awareness there. The first stage that we need to do in anything is to become aware of it.
Right, and so what happens is, or what should happen is, moving your ego out of the way so that you can even admit to yourself what hurts, what you don't know, what you don't understand. And then if you can't answer any of those questions, go ask somebody.
Yeah, no, it's like when you cut your hand, right? Someone witnesses you cutting your hand. We do this. I'm good. yeah, no problem. Last to plast on that. We'll cover it up. We're fine. Instead of being truthful and saying, you know what, this is, I'm feeling a bit sick. I'm feeling a bit, this has really got into me. I'm losing blood. And being truthful about it, we tend to create this air of this illusion that everything in the garden is rosy and we're fine and we'll break through it. And the reality is we don't really have an awareness of our own vulnerability and our own power.
See, you mentioned the garden, and this analogy just came to me. So you go out to the garden, and it's like everything in the garden is fine.
Yeah.
Except the gardener.
Exactly, that's it, right? The garden looks great, but the gardener's planting weeds instead of seeds.
And doesn't even realize it, and is afraid to ask for help. And so I think those are the kind of the main things that we need to understand about grief, is that you can grieve a loss and you can't, or it doesn't help to judge yourself, like trying to determine, was the loss big enough for me to grieve? Sometimes stuff hurts more than you expected it to. And so you're thinking, oh, well, I only knew her for 6 or 7 months and we were just friends. So why does it hurt this way? And it's things like that where let me just admit and acknowledge that it hurts. And so that's the beginning of the recovery process. And then it's so without self-judgment. And then to say, okay, this hurts more than I was expecting in this grief process. What is happening in my body? I don't understand. Who can I talk to? You have to put your ego aside, ask for help, and do things to elevate your own happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. I've noticed that a lot of people who have loss, and not just loss of a loved one, but especially the loss of a loved one, what made them happy before, they feel guilt about making themselves happy because they've lost. They don't value themselves after the loss. And I think that's also the same whether you lose a relationship of a wife or a husband or even a job. There's an element of you devaluing yourself. Yeah. And so you don't allow yourself to feel to do the things that make you happy.
Yeah, that's very true. And what happens is a lot of times we don't understand that it's our body communicating with our brain. So it's working in reverse. And so what happens is, well, I'm going to go do this to make me feel better. How come it's not working? I'm not in the mood, whatever. And it's because the grief is suppressing the body's ability to experience the happy hormones. And so what needs to happen in that moment, being aware of what's happening in this moment, I don't need to go do what I love. I need to process the emotion of feeling right now.
And we suppress it and then hit alcohol and drugs and everything else to suppress that.
Right, exactly. Because a lot of those things can be associated with or tied to our ego.
Yeah.
Right. Our ego and fear. So what men do, we drink. And I can suppress it and hide my fear of acknowledging it or dealing with it. And so what happens is it doesn't go anywhere. You sober up and it's still there. The grief is still there.
It don't go, does it? That's the thing. It doesn't. It's no matter what you do to suppress that emotion or to suppress that feeling, it doesn't take it away. It still exists. And this is where I've always said, no matter what element of grief or the experience of grief, you have to have an awareness and an acceptance, because if you don't have acceptance of it, you can't change it.
Right. You're absolutely right. And when we say having an acceptance of it, a big part of having an acceptance of your emotions is being present in what your body is experiencing right now. And so you can be reminiscing about something and say, I'm going to stop reminiscing about that because it's not doing me any good and I'm going to go do this. And that's a good strategy. The distraction can be a good emotion regulation strategy. However, you choose that strategy and you still feel broken, well, be present, be mindful. I, in this moment, feel broken. And then when I can acknowledge that, then I position myself to do something about it in the moment.
And that's awareness, ladies and gentlemen, to have an awareness of it.
Right, exactly, because what happens is grief, the intensity of grief and the intrusiveness of grief isn't a steady state thing. It ebbs and flows, goes up and down. And so to be present with your emotions allows you to process an emotion one micro moment to the next. And we have to understand that processing emotions isn't just in your head. You have to process the physiological aspects of grief in your body.
Yeah, and people don't think about that, actually. I mean, it's I know in the community that I run with, there's guys in there and there's women in there who have lost loved ones. So cool. But one of the things that shock them, and even in some of the research I've done, is that they are very surprised at how the grief has affected them in their body.
Yes, yes. And the thing about it is, a lot of people, they don't fully understand it. But for some things in life, you don't need the deep scientific understanding.
No.
You know, let me explain the physiological aspect of grief. When you say it felt like a punch in the stomach, that's all you need. There's your evidence. I felt it in my chest. That's it.
Yeah.
You felt it in your chest. Do we need to run a functional MRI? Not at all.
No, we don't. Absolutely. Yeah. Not.
Yeah.
But you know, here's the danger, though. And I want to jump into this before we finish, because when someone is experiencing grief, whether it's, the other aspects of grief we're talking about, loss of a loved one, loss of a relationship, loss of a job or anything else. The other element is they think they need help, and rather so they're losing self-compassion, right? They don't have an awareness that it's grief, and they don't know what's happening, and their body's changing. Then what happens is, and this is, I think, is the danger part, they'll go to a therapist or a doctor who really cannot empathize, because they're coming from only a place of theory and not any relevant experience. And then make things worse by dulling down the emotion by giving drugs.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. Here's the thing about therapy. Because therapists are very powerful. Therapy is very powerful. The first thing that has to happen is you have to have a relationship with your therapist. You have to be able to connect. It doesn't matter your experience level. It doesn't matter
trust.
Your expertise. And so because what happens is, and you say that it, therapy can make it worse. Well, one way that therapy can make it worse is if you don't have the connection with your therapist. So then you create.
Or the therapist has no experience.
See, while that can happen, here's my thing with a therapist that has no experience. You don't even get to that if you don't build rapport. You don't even get to it, because if we have real rapport, I could say to you, if you trust me, not in my resume, but in my character, you trust me, then I can say to you, I want to try this thing with you because of how bad it hurts, but I've never done it before. And you can say, well, let's try it because I need help. But if we don't have that rapport, then you're not going to allow yourself to be vulnerable enough to even connect with me. And so if I lack experience, but we have a good relationship, I can tell you I lack experience, which may not be the smartest thing.
No.
But it positions us in a way to work together on your grief. But if I think that you don't like me, your level of experience doesn't matter.
Well, here, let me be devil's advocate here as well. Let me say another thing. So let's say you've had, you've lost tremendous loss. You lose a daughter. When you lose one of your daughters, that would just, destroy you. But then you go to a therapist, and this is maybe a grief counselor who has never experienced loss, who has never lost a son, a daughter, a mum, a dad, an aunt, an uncle, or even a pet. They've never lost anyone, right? How can they, and this is a thing that Brené Brown says, you know, and I love Brené Brown, but she talks about, you know, being, you know, showing empathy is getting into the abyss where you're getting into the well, the dark well that you're in, and empathy and being with you in that moment. You can't do that if you haven't got that experience. If you've never experienced that loss, how can I empathize and feel your loss? And even because you can never understand someone's personal loss and how they feel. You can only empathize because of your experience. So how do you see that? Because I think that's a bigger problem.
So there's a couple different things here. So first of all, I will say this. First of all, you're going to be hard pressed to find a therapist who's never dealt with that. Second of all, you have to be able to connect, because the therapist, well, empathy is connecting with the emotion, and emotions are physiological. And so maybe if I've never experienced that, I know what it feels like for my experience, life experience, to impact my appetite, the way that I carry myself, my self-esteem. So let me find something that I can work on. That doesn't work if I don't trust the therapist, or vice versa. And then the last thing that I'm going to say to you, the last thing, which is very important, is ethics in the profession, where the therapist can say, because I'll tell you this, my expertise, trauma, suicide, emotional intelligence, positive psychology. So if you were to say to me that you're dealing with schizophrenia, it's not enough to say, oh, I've never dealt with that before. That's not enough. I need to say, that's not my area of expertise. Let me refer you to someone else. That's my ethics.
Ethics is a massive part of it.
I have to be able to tell you that. Like, look, and so then I can say to you, like, look, I'm going to be there for you. And on your worst days, if you need someone to sit with you when you cry, I'll be there for you. But
that's the difference.
But the therapeutic process, I cannot do with you because I don't have that level of experience. And let me tell you this, as a life coach, coaching people, I had a client who, because of what happened during her childhood, she was having a hard time connecting with her daughter. So we worked through that with different forms of cognitive behavioral coaching.
Yeah.
And her, not only was her relationship with her daughter getting better, and she was almost 40, her daughter was 12, but she was feeling better about herself. She was unlocking new levels of self-love. And then what happened? As those aspects of her brain healed, because it is physiological as well, it opened up a door to other trauma that she had suppressed. So then she calls me, says that she had flashbacks to memories from her childhood that she forgot were there. And so then how did I handle that? I think you need to talk to somebody else.
There we go. That is absolutely. And actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because that is a fundamental part of my academic research at the moment, is the dangers associated with mindful practices, meditative practices, and how the mind, you know, when you're presented and you get through something, then obviously these other emotions come up, and you have to be able to face them. And if you're not ready for them, it can cause mental imbalance, possible psychosis, and going into even other elements of prolonged grief disorder, which is another thing to do. So
in this relationship I had with her, you know, so all of the things that you're talking about, healing with therapy begins again with that relationship, building that rapport.
The relationship,
We had the kind of relationship where when she says she had flashbacks, I knew it's related to her testifying as a child and saying things as a child that got her stepdad put in prison. So I'm not talking about her falling off her bike and breaking her arm.
Yeah, that's some trauma to deal with. Yeah.
So as a professional, I'm creating the environment where she knows that she can be open with me like that. However, she is responsible to either be vulnerable, be open to that, or saying, I don't think it's a good connection. I'm going to talk to someone else.
Yeah.
And when you're grieving and you don't feel that connection, go to someone else. Don't waste your time with someone you can't connect with. And the person that you connect with that helps you heal doesn't have to have a license.
No, that's true.
Yeah. It can be someone that loves you and cares about you and knows, and they know how to listen to you. Like,
that's the big thing. They know how to listen.
Because there may be the person that, there may be the person that can tell you about prolonged exposure or EMDR.
Yeah.
And then there's the other person that knows, based on the look on your face, you could use tacos and a hug.
Yeah.
Like,
I like tacos and a hug. So yeah. So that's for me.
and I'll say this, you know, piggybacking on what I just said. So the fact that everyone in your life, if they've never grieved before, they will grieve at some point in the future.
Yes, inevitable.
Yeah. The way to prepare for that is to be vulnerable and honest and open in your relationships.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Like, what else can we say?
Yeah. And think about this. Here's my challenge. Here's my challenge for the listeners. Make a list of the people that you love the most. And then write down the month and year of the last time you gave them a real hug. And if you can't think of it, fix that.
Wow. That's awesome, Charleston. That is, now, ladies and gentlemen, before we finish off, that is the last thing we're going to say there. But that's your homework, right? That's homework from Charleston. We will be back. This was part two, but we're going to be back and doing more. I think.
Yes.
I think the next one we will. I think the next one we should tackle, Charleston, is loss of identity and go even deeper into the identity side of things,
exactly.
Because that's massive.
It really is, and it's really something that we can jump on right now for the next hour.
I know, but we don't. Obviously, we realize we've been over an hour today, and we want you to come back. We want, yes, you to make sure that you subscribe, because you know this Pillars of Grief is, yes, it's about the loss of a loved one. It's about the loss of, it's about loss. It's about bereavement. It's about the impact in your life, and that covers so many avenues. And this is why I have my good friend here, Dr. Charleston Gaines, and we'll be tackling other subject matters, especially as we move forward. But you've heard it. He's given you homework, and we expect homework to be done, or we'll want to know why. Yeah. We'll be expecting. And so if you've got something you want to ask us, if there's something in this episode that just strikes a chord with you, or you're confused, then drop us a message and we'll tackle that, and you know, we'll deal with that. We'll answer that question for you. So Charleston, it's always awesome to you know, bring our minds together and talk about these subject matters, and I love the fact that we dive into the psyche of it, but there's so much more that we've got to cover, so much more that we've got to do as well.
All right. Well, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to have these conversations with you, because it's needed, right?
It is.
It's needed. It's necessary. And it's not even about being necessary for all of these other people. Like, you and I get something out of these conversations too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am not above learning. I'm not above feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not above grief,
and I learn just as much. We both learn as we talk on these conversations, and it helps us to move forward, research more, find out more. But the thing is that if we say something, Charleston says something that hits a chord with you, that's what it's about. If we can educate you, so that, because you heard in this episode, ladies and gentlemen, that the biggest problem is people don't know they're going through grief. If you don't know what you're experiencing, how can you fix it? So if we can help you to be just, even if you're someone who's listening now and you know someone that might be fitting that pattern and they don't know, then maybe you're the person that can support them and say, hey, you might actually be grieving and this is how we can tackle it.
Yes.
So let us know. Keep in touch with us. Final thoughts, my friend?
My final thoughts is do not let your ego or insecurity be the barrier to your healing.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Love it. And those of you who are watching the video on YouTube, just ignore the little wobbly camera at the beginning because he was having an episode. So God bless, guys. We will be back definitely. And there's other episodes that's coming up. And then Charleston and I will be back and we'll be tackling another subject matter. That will probably be identity. But if you want something, if you want us to talk about something that really is in your heart, let us know. We will do that. God bless. Thank you for tuning in to the Pillars of Grief with me. If you've found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Also, leaving a review can help others find the show and receive the guidance they need on their journey through grief. I appreciate your feedback and look forward to hearing from you all. Join my free online support community for those grieving and connect with others who understand what you're going through. I offer you a spiritual blessing and hope you will join me on the next episode. Till then, open your mind and allow the power of the divine to transform your grief to spiritual realization. God bless.